most despised talk show in all of human history. This is the talk show hell hates. This is Pastor Mike Online.
Here we are, coming to you live from our top secret broadcasting bunker here at Area 52. This is the talk show hell hates. The more you listen, the more you know why. Good to be with you today. A little bit of a raspy voice today. Everybody here at our church has a cold. And my wife has had it all last week. Major chest congestion, sinus drainage, all of that stuff. I've got people here in the building now with it. My little grandson, Malachi, he is sick with RSV. That's a respiratory virus, and it works bad against little children. And I'm a little hoarse today. That makes me a pony. And I'm trying to see if I had a horse button. Do I have a horse? No, it's a duck. Viaduct. I don't know. Vinataduct. Anyway, so I will probably end up with it by the end of the week, and won't be hardly able to talk. Anyway, good to be with you today. I still have more to deal with and talk about in relation to the MUFON conference symposium that we went to last weekend in Las Vegas, Nevada. Actually, I went there. It was twofold. Number one, to give out the DVDs that we distributed, and we did give out quite a few of those to quite a few people. My hope and prayer is that people would watch them with an open mind. And in the UFO movement, it's like watching a movie about Christianity. What church puts out whatever movie on Christianity will be based upon that church's doctrine of Christianity. You see what I'm saying? And how many different denominations are there? Oh my goodness, there's tons of them. And it's that way with the UFO movement. There's all these different ideas and theories about what they are, what they want, what they're doing here, what they're not doing here, what is their plan, their agenda, when are they going to show themselves, you know, when is there going to be, everybody's worried about government disclosure. The government's not going to disclose anything. It's going to take God throwing them out of heaven, them literally falling to the earth without any other place to go to. And then they're going to say, hi, we're here. Okay. Although we may not be able to understand a word they say, because I think that part is biblical. And I'm going to get into some of that today. So we went to give out the DVDs. And we gave out, like I say, we gave out quite a bit. Not near as many as we took. But that's okay. This weekend is all these towns all across America this time of year start having their fall festivals. Some call it Oktoberfest, some call it Harvest Fest, you name it. In this area, it's called Twin City Days. Festus and Crystal City are twin cities. One sort of branched off from the other back in the late 1800s. And if you've not ever heard the story, Crystal City, Missouri was the original town in this area, and it housed Pittsburgh Plate Glass. Crystal City, Missouri was a company town, and the company ran the town. And the company did not allow any alcohol establishments inside city limits. They wanted their workers to not give in to the evils of alcohol. They didn't want guys coming in drunk the next day or hungover or missing work because they were drunk. So outside of the city limits, that started to develop. People said, well, I don't want to live in town. I want to live outside of town. So that area started to develop, and it was known as Tanglefoot because that's where all the beer joints were and the taverns. And the guys who lived in Crystal City would go over to Tanglefoot, and they would get drunk, and they would come tanglefooting back home, get up the next day and go to work at the glass factory. This is all true. So when the area developed enough to where they wanted to be their own specific town, they said, let's form a town, but we don't want to call it Tanglefoot. Us good Christian people, we're going to pick a name out of the Bible. And so obviously it was a King James Bible. They had a ceremony, a certain woman, I don't know what position she held, but anyway, they handed her a Bible, and she was to open it up. The first proper name she came to in the Bible, that's what they would name the town. So she opened it up to the book of Acts and found the man by the name of Festus in the Bible. He's the one that said to Paul, thou almost persuadest me to become a Christian. But he didn't. And what does his name mean? Festus. It means party, festival. It means a woo-hoo, let's get drunk. True story. True, absolutely true story. So anyway, where was we going with that? But anyway, so all the DVDs we have left over from Vegas, John has a booth that he's going to set up for Twin City Days, and he's going to give the DVDs that we have left out. So it works out pretty good. And we try to do that every year, or he tries to do it every year. And so we'll just pray for him that God will use that ministry. But I understand a prophet is without honor save in his own... did I say that right? Prophet is not without honor, save in his own country. So while people all over the world may like me, people here, not so much. But I'm fine with that. So anyway, we go to give out the DVDs. And that did okay. But then when I saw the list of speakers, George Knapp, who is the one who really broke the Area 51 story. People in Las Vegas didn't even know it was there back in the 80s. They didn't know it was there. They didn't know what it was. And all of a sudden, George Knapp from KLAS in Las Vegas has an interview that canceled on him, and they had heard from a guy named John Lear, whose father invented the Lear jet. John Lear was himself a UFO buff, and he was a CIA pilot and has, you know, this government contact past. He knew Bob Lazar and was encouraging George Knapp to interview Bob Lazar. So they did an initial interview of Lazar. Lazar hid his face and called himself Dennis. Turns out Dennis was his manager, his boss there at S4. And for the very first time, the world hears a story that the United States government is back engineering 9 alien spacecraft at a place called S4, not too far from the test site of Area 51. Now, again, before this, we take Area 51 for granted, that everybody's known it for years, but it wasn't that way. No one had ever heard of this. It was such a well-kept secret. No one knew it. So George Knapp was there, and he gave us a rundown on the different government programs, ATIP, AUSAP, BASS, which was a program run by Robert Bigelow. Bigelow Aerospace Advanced something another. Robert Bigelow. But let me talk about Robert Bigelow for a minute, because it turns out that one of our followers in the Las Vegas area is well acquainted to some extent with Robert Bigelow. And as she is telling this story about a certain billionaire, I'm thinking, is she talking about Robert Bigelow? And I said, are you talking about Robert Bigelow? And she said, yeah, that's the guy. And I went, I know this name. Robert Bigelow is, he started out making his billions in the hotel industry. He owns a string of hotels across the country. I'm not going to give the name brand out or anything like that. And that's how he's made his billions. Now, you're a billionaire and you live in Las Vegas. What does that mean? Well, it means that you do certain things with your money. Now, Bigelow has a wife. Bigelow believes that it's possible that he may have had some alien encounters when he was a young person. He doesn't know that. I've heard the interview. He doesn't give very many interviews. He doesn't trust very many people. But he's given interviews to George Knapp, and I think he's been interviewed Joe Rogan. But Robert Bigelow is fascinated with UFOs. And he spends his billions of dollars now researching the two single most important questions in the universe. Number one, are we alone in this universe? And if we are, why? And then number two, does your consciousness survive death? In other words, is there really such a thing as death? Now, one of the interesting things about the whole UFO alien thing to me is this, and this is where the Bible steps right in, and it is a major, major doctrine. Because for the most part, those who have had encounters with those who would call themselves contactees, either by abduction or they are CE5 participants, where they go in and they go into a yoga trance and they contact ET, and ET just shows up, these UFOs show up, appear in the sky, you know, float lights around everybody and then leave. And everybody goes, ooh, ah, they came to us. That is so wonderful. Amongst those who are contactees, who have had actual mind telepathy transfers of information from an alien skull to their skull, they have been taught that death does not really exist. Now, this is a major, major, I cannot tell you how important this is. So I'll just read it to you. Genesis chapter 2. Let's see here. Genesis 2:16. The Lord God commanded of the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. There's 39 words there. 39 is 39 books in the Old Testament, the law. And it's death. God, Paul says, by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin. So that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, therefore all must die. And it is appointed unto man once to die, and after this, the judgment. The Jezebel that I dealt with there in Vegas, who kept going, shh, I'm still talking. The one that kept hushing me up, her whole point was that there really is no such thing as death. That yes, this body gives away, but your soul is judged by God, and you are sent to another body to live another life on this earth. In other words, you continue to live different lives on this earth until you figure things out. Sounds like the movie Groundhog Day, where Bill Murray, the weather forecaster, has to figure everything out. He lives thousands of lives. If you read the Internet Movie Database, the guy who produced the movie Groundhog Day said that if you kind of do the math on it, they didn't really picture this in the movie, but he lives thousands of days all over again. Thousands of them. So that he at one point says, I am a God. No kidding you. He is an immortal. He keeps living his life all over again on the same day, the 33rd day of the year. Groundhog Day. So anyway, that's a major, major thing that Edgar Mitchell has bought into, that Whitley Strieber's bought into, Stephen Greer's bought into it, and Robert Bigelow is buying into it. He is researching the idea that your consciousness lives past the death of your body. And he says that He wants this question answered because it deeply affected him that his wife died, and he wants to be able to know that she's still alive somewhere and doing well. Well, let me tell you what I heard about Mr. Bigelow. When you're in Las Vegas and you're a billionaire, they refer to you as a billionaire playboy. And he is. Because this source of mine knows someone who works very closely for Mr. Bigelow. I won't say who it is, how they work for him, but he brings home a hooker just about every night. And the guy's got to be in his 70s. Okay? So I just have a problem understanding whether or not he really is mourning the death of his wife. And was that going on before his wife died? Who knows? I just know that it's very easy to do this in Nevada. It's there. It's everywhere in Nevada. So anyway, Robert Bigelow is involved in and has spent a ton of money in finding out whether or not we exist past our death. And I know the Psalms have, there's something to say about that in the book of Psalms. I've read it, that the rich, they think they can continue on past their death. This is why they name cities after themselves. This is why they have statues erected in their honor. This is why they have streets named after them. Or they want their star put in the, there's a Las Vegas Walk of Fame. There's a Hollywood Walk of Fame. They want their name to continue on. They don't want anybody to forget them because they're very important people. And my friends, the Bible's right. It is appointed unto man once to die, and after this, the judgment. And it doesn't matter how many billions of dollars you accumulated in your life. You're not taking any of that with you. It's not going. Somebody else is going to blow through all your hard-earned money that you worked your life accumulating. Somebody else is going to inherit it, and if they live in Las Vegas, they're going to blow it all in a week. Guarantee you. And I mean, that's just the nature of it. Why work all your life trying to be rich when you're going to die and lose every cent of it? But rich people right now are the ones who are trying to cheat death. They're trying to escape the aspects of death because they want to maintain their wealthy, comfortable status for an eternity. And they've got it all backwards. They think that by investing in technology, and even, you know, you've got on one side Ray Kurzweil, who is trying to spend, you know, a majority of his time, expertise, vast knowledge, he's got a high IQ, and his resources trying to find a scientific way for himself to survive his own death. You've got guys like Robert Bigelow on the other side using the paranormal realm of trying to cheat death to make sure that his consciousness is going to remain beyond his death so that he could still live this wealthy life that he has built for himself and carry himself on past his normal state. And then there is God's way. God's way says, forsake this world. Hate this world. Long to be gone from this world. Trust in Jesus Christ. Confess your sins. Quit bringing hookers home every night. And God will give you a crown of life that will last forever. You will live in comfort and joy for all of eternity. I'd say God's got a way better plan than what all the rich people can come up with combined. God's got a way better plan for man's benefit and man to continue on after his own death. Amen. So, let me do this. Take your Bible, turn to Ezekiel 1. We're gonna do some looking into that. I've got some quotes that I found in my notes that weren't necessarily related to the MUFON Symposium, but I thought I would fit them in here. And then I'm going to deal with the event that took place at the RAF Woodbridge or RAF Bentwaters. It's two Royal Air Force bases within 6 miles of each other, on the eastern side of England, toward, you know, right close to the channel between England and France. And this was all post-World War II America and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. In other words, it was the United States, England, some of the Scandinavian countries, Germany, France, whatever, that said, we want American military bases in our country to help us defend ourselves. Number one, we're not going to let Germany start another war. They've started two of them. We're not going to let them start a third one. But number three, we're not going to let Russia start a third one either. So in the NATO days, you had America that had all these military bases literally all over Europe. And we had strategic positions. We were not going to wait for the Russians to show up at New York City. We were going to try to keep them where they were from Western Europe. So the RAF Woodbridge, RAF Bentwaters air bases were under U.S. military command, and they had nuclear weapons stored there. And I want you to hold that thought for a minute. But let me show you some of the things that have been said by people in the know when it comes to, do we human beings right now possess the technology that at one time, only the angels had, only the spirits had, only the ETs had? Have we attained to that knowledge yet? Some say yes, some say no. But let me show you some of the quotes that have been made over the last few years. This is Ben Rich, head of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works. Skunk Works is a special access program. In other words, it's dark money, money that is not necessarily accounted for by Congress. Congress votes to approve this money. But that doesn't mean that congressmen necessarily get to know what happens with the money. And Skunk Works has always been a program, Lockheed Martin, building aircraft that were superior in every way to what the Russians had or the Chinese had. Ben Rich stated, 1993 alumni speech at UCLA. He said, we already have the means to travel among the stars. But these technologies are locked up in black projects, and it would take an act of God to ever get them out to benefit humanity. But anything you can imagine we already know how to do. Now, let me tell you why that is a significant statement. Because of, we're going to go back to Genesis, not chapter 2, not chapter 3, but Genesis chapter 11. When man began to imagine, he said, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach into heaven. We already have a city in heaven. It's called the International Space Station. It has a population of what, about 7 or 8 astronauts on it at any given time, maybe a few more, maybe a few less. But we already have that up there. And there are plans now, and Bigelow Aerospace is part of this. They've built pods. They've got the government contract through NASA to build pods for people to live in a artificial gravity environment. In other words, it does what the space station in 2001 A Space Odyssey does. It spins around. It does revolutions to produce artificial gravity so that people could stay up there indefinitely. And in that case, in Genesis 11, verse 6, and the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down there, confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel. Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. So if Ben Rich says anything you can imagine we already know how to do, then that puts us in a category, according to God, as dangerous. Because if we have the technology, we have technology then to become gods and to live in the heavens with the other gods. But humans being gods is not a good thing ever. It's not a good thing. It's bad. Let's see here. Click. Ben showed slides and went through the history of the Skunk Works. Showed pictures of the U-2 spy plane, the SR-71, and drones that no one had ever seen before. The kicker was the last slide. It showed a black disc headed for space. Ben showed this and made the statement, we now have the technology to take E.T. home. He made this statement in 1993, but did not say how long we have had this technology. There was a question and answer after the lecture. In this Q&A, he told the engineers that it was now possible to travel to the stars. There was an error in the equations, which was corrected. The time of travel is fast, but he didn't say how fast. Ben said he believed that security was too oppressive and that the time had come to develop this technology in the commercial world now that the Cold War has ended. Months later, he died of cancer. I do believe that there is a shadow government that operates outside of the laws of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the amendments. Operate outside of the oversight of Congress, the courts, the executive branch. I believe that shadow government exists. They do not have loyalties to the United States of America. They have loyalties only unto themselves. In other words, these projects are ours, and we don't have to share them if we don't want to. If you remember, Hillary Clinton, when she ran for president, 2016, ran, you know, decided to just put this out there on the David Letterman show to see how well it went over. And Letterman asked her, you know, did Bill ever show you a UFO or something like that? And she said, no, but the first thing that I'm going to do when I become president is I'm going to open up all the files and documents related to UFOs and government knowledge. Well, did she become president? No. A guy that said, I don't necessarily believe in UFOs, he's the one that became president. And a question was asked, you know, what's the first thing that people do when they become president? That Bill Clinton, as soon as he became president, walked in and said, I want everything on JFK and I want everything you have on UFOs. Well, they're not going to show him everything, because they know he's going to be in office 4 years, maybe 8 years. He's going to be out, but they're still going to be around. And they don't show him everything. They don't show the president everything, and they don't have to. He says, we now have the technology to take ET home. No, it won't take someone's lifetime to do it. There is an error in the equations. We know that. We know what it is. We now have the capability to travel to the stars. First, you have to understand that we will not get to the stars using chemical propulsion. Second, we have to devise a new propulsion technology. What we have to do is find out where Einstein went wrong. When Rich was asked how UFO propulsion worked, he said, let me ask you, how does ESP work? Now, what does ESP, extrasensory perception, the fact that I can sit here in this chair and let's say there's somebody listening to me by the name of Robert, that I can sit here and know Robert's last name, his address, his birthday, his social security number, his bank account numbers, and what he had for breakfast and what he watched on the internet last night before he went to bed, that I could know that. That's extrasensory perception. And he said, how does ESP work? The questioner responded with, all points in time and space are connected. Rich then said, that's how it works. That right there was the exact thing that Edgar Mitchell, sixth man to walk on the moon, Apollo 14, scientist, high IQ scientist, astronaut, extremely well trained. They didn't just put people in capsules that didn't really know what they were doing. You had to be intensively trained and know everything about that capsule, frontwards, backwards, sidewards, slantwards, and every other words. On the way back from the moon, he's sitting there in the capsule, pondering the nature of existence, looking out at the heavens, and has what's called a samadhi experience, where literally spirits take over his thought process. He goes into a samadhi trance and has the I guess it's a feeling, an inner knowing that every atom in his body was not only connected with every other atom in his body, but that it was connected with every atom in the universe. And that he could see faraway places that he had never seen before, on faraway planets that we didn't even know existed. He could visualize those at a just by thinking about it. And it altered his consciousness. So when he lands on the Earth, he immediately goes into starting working programs about consciousness and how to raise man's consciousness and how for all mankind to have this same experience that he had. He started the Institute for Noetic Science because he believed, watch this now, he believed that if he could get enough people together to think of the exact same thing, that those people, by thinking about it, could cause that event to take place. That's what he believed. So it's, what can I equate it to? I know, 2 Thessalonians 2, for this cause God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. And once all mankind thinks of the same lie together, then that lie then becomes reality. And it's going to bring in the Antichrist, the man of sin, the son of perdition. That's how I think it's going to happen. And we're pushing that right now. He said there are two types of UFOs. The ones we build. Think about what he's saying. There are two types of UFOs. The ones we build and the ones they build. We have learned from both crash retrievals and actual hand-me-downs. The government knew and until 1969 took an active hand in the administration of that information. After a 1969 Nixon purge, administration was handled by an international board of directors in the private sector. You see, that's one way to get people from discovering what the government is doing through the Freedom of Information Act. Right now, you can submit a request, you can even get legal help and sue the government to get it to release certain documents that they don't want to release. But the government then figured out, if we turn all of this research over to one of our contractors, like, you know, Boeing or Lockheed Martin or, you know, General Electric or anything like that, if we turn our research over to them, then it's private knowledge that no one in the world has a right to have access to because it belongs to a corporation, not a government. It was Ben Rich's opinion that the public should not be told about UFOs and extraterrestrials. He believed they could not handle the truth. You can't handle the truth, ever. Only in the last months of his decline did he begin to feel that the International Corporate Board of Directors dealing with the subject could represent a bigger problem to citizens' personal freedoms under the United States Constitution than the presence of off-world visitors themselves. Robert Bigelow said this, I've been a researcher and student of UFO for many, many years. Anybody that does research, if people bother to do quality research, comes away absolutely convinced. You don't have to be a person. You don't have to have personal encounters. People have been killed. People have been hurt. It's more than observational kind of data. Robert Bigelow said that New York Times article, June 7th, 2010. Then there's Tom DeLonge, rock star, Freemason. And he said, I came out and told you guys about a book I was writing called Secret Machines. I have that book. And I said a bunch of stuff that I was working with some people. Well, I think a lot of people doubted it. And they thought it was crazy that this musician would have this kind of access. And then the WikiLeaks thing happened. And you guys saw that I'm into some serious, I won't read that word. And I'm making really good progress. Now, his To the Stars Academy of Arts and Scientists, that company that Tom DeLonge started is about to just dissolve. They produced two seasons on the History Channel of Unidentified. But beyond that, they really haven't done a whole lot. There's no very little investor money going into it. Some of the key guys that were with him at the beginning have already quit. So it doesn't look really good for To the Stars Academy. Tom DeLonge sent the following email to John Podesta. You know who John Podesta is, don't you? He is Hillary's campaign manager. He said, I received your email address from your assistant. As from time to time, I would like to get you information that is not appropriate for others to see. And here is one of those times. The ranking general on my committee has some ideas for a memo that would help provide context for his and the other officers' work on this project. Also, I'm flying out to Texas to meet some more private individuals and then flying to have dinner with current commanding officers at the Air Force Space Command in a couple of days in Colorado Springs to discuss how to move this project forward. My committee grows larger by the day after I will write and fill you in. That was part of the WikiLeaks thing, and I won't get into all of that. The relationship between astronomy and faith in an interview with the father with Father Funes, director of the Vatican Observatory. He said, the extraterrestrial is my brother. Oh, brother. Are we in trouble? Now, Rendlesham Forest. Boxing Day. Let's see, that would have been December 26, 1980, I believe. For those of you who don't know what Boxing Day is a day traditionally in England when all of the rich, wealthy people who had Christmas dinner leftovers and or presents that they didn't really want, boxed them up and gave them out into the streets to the poor people. That's what Boxing Day is. Again, let me explain Rendlesham Forest and the Bentwaters Woodbridge thing. Here is London. Here is Suffolk County. This is the channel between France and England. And in the county of Suffolk, we have the RAF Bentwaters, the RAF Woodbridge. These are two Royal Air Force airports, but they are under the control of the United States because of NATO. And it was America basically telling Russia, you better stay in your playpen. We'll stay in ours, but we've got nuclear bombs that we can pick up and within minutes drop them on Moscow. And that's what that was really all about. So right around Christmas 1980, in this area between the two, and there's only like 6 miles here between Bentwaters and Woodbridge, all of a sudden, these two guards start seeing these lights, and the forest just is glowing red. They thought maybe a plane had crashed and caught on fire and was making the forest glow red with fire. They went out to investigate. Sergeant Peniston, Charles Peniston, I think, John Peniston, and Sergeant John Burroughs both go out to investigate. And they come upon this craft that has landed in the forest. And they describe it as it just had these colors going all through it, like mingled together, flowing through. They said that there was no doubt that that ship was under intelligent design. It turns out that Sergeant Pennington is an expert, a trained expert on aircraft design. In other words, he knows the difference between an American aircraft, a Russian aircraft, a Chinese aircraft, a North Korean aircraft, Saudi Arabian aircraft. He knows the difference between planes. He is an expert in this. He's part of the security of the air bases. So he's looking at this, and he's walking around it. He's looking for tail fins. He's looking for exhaust. He's looking for engines. He's looking for landing wheels. He's looking for wings. He's looking for a cockpit. Doesn't see any of that. He puts his hand on it. It's warm, and it feels like molten glass, like glass that's all fused together. He said it didn't have rivets on it, didn't have metal plates that overlapped, where you had folds of metal plates, you know how you get. No rivets, no bolts, no screws, no nuts, no hydraulics, nothing. It was just looked like smooth black glass. And then all of a sudden the color went out of it. They could still see it. It looked like polished glass. Peniston goes over to it, notices that there is writing on top of it. Now, at the MUFON conference, John Burroughs was at this conference and spoke. And Colonel Holt, who was the deputy base commander of RAF Woodbridge, both of them were there. I got a chance to meet and talk to and shake hands with Colonel Holt. I told him, thank you for your service to your country. Thank you for speaking the truth about what it is you saw. And he said, well, I figured I have to tell the truth. There was so much lies floating around that I had to tell the truth. And I told him I appreciated that. We didn't talk long, but it was good to meet him. These guys are not lying. They didn't make this story up. Peniston goes over and he looks on top of the craft and sees what he calls glyphs on there. It looks like some sort of writing. He carries a little notebook with him and he's trying to draw what it is that he sees. He's in his hurry, you know, and he's shaking a little bit. So he sort of draws what he sees. It doesn't look like anything that we see here on Earth. Doesn't look like any language that we know about. There is John Burroughs on the upper left, Jim Peniston on the lower right. Now, the idea that they see a language on this craft that they do not recognize That's biblical. That idea is biblical. Deuteronomy 28. God promised he would send a nation. A nation is a genetic, diversely genetic group of people. Different from any other nation. They are a nation of fierce countenance. That means that they look fierce. They look angry. They look devilish. They look evil. Right? And so he said, the Lord shall bring a nation against thee from far, from the end of the earth. Now, where's the end of the earth? It's called the Kármán line. It's where the earth's atmosphere ends and outer space or heaven begins. That's where they're coming from. They're not coming from South Carolina. They're not coming from Canada. They're not coming from Russia. They're not coming from Venezuela. They're not coming from Poland. They're not coming from Denmark. They're coming from a nation that is beyond the end of the earth. They come as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. A nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. And he shall eat the fruit of thy cattle. Linda Moulton Howe, who a lot of her beliefs I do not agree with, but she's been investigating cattle mutilations since the 70s. She's done a documentary film for HBO back in the 80s, early 80s. And she said that there is absolutely no way that anything that we know about on Earth could recreate what's being done to these cattle. Number one, they're taken up. There are no tracks around where they find the body. No animal tracks, no human tracks, nothing. They're taken up. Every single molecule of blood is extracted from their bodies. Every ounce of blood. Now, I don't know how that's possible, but that's what they do. Then they cut out, if it's a female cow, they'll cut off its udders with laser-like precision. If it's a male or female cow, they will cut out its genitalia for some reason. They will take out a big chunk, and it's always like a laser incision here out of the side of their face. They will take that, and then they will place, in some cases, like if it's a calf, they will completely remove every shred of muscle tissue off of every bone with the skin still intact, and then lay it gently back in a place where, again, where there's no tracks, nothing. baffling stuff. This is not predators eating this. We used to hear about this when I was a kid, cattle mutilations, and we thought it was, you know, satanic cults. And I remember we walking down the road one time, we saw something that got run over by a car, and we swore up and down that that was what they were talking about, one of these cattle mutilations, and we just had in our mind that there was a witch coven practicing witchcraft somewhere around in our neighborhood, had us scared to death, absolutely scared to death. But anyway, God said that this nation would be a nation whose countenance would be fierce and whose tongue that they would not understand. So as Peniston begins to rub his hand over the lettering that's on this ship, he immediately, a light flashes, and he said it's hard to describe, but he gets what he calls a download of information into his brain. And he cannot get it out of his mind. When he goes back to the base later, he can't sleep. This information is in his head. He doesn't know what to do with it. Finally, he said, you know, I think I can start writing this down. And so he gets his notebook out and he starts 16 pages of zeros and ones. And he didn't know what that was back in 1980. Back in 1980, nobody knew what those zeros and ones were, except for people who programmed computers. It was binary code. And he writes down all those zeros and ones that are in his head. And when he starts feeling better, and as he gets to the last one and writes it down, boom, it's gone. He remembers it no more. He feels completely satisfied, but he's got this information that he doesn't know what it is or anything like that. So he closes up this notebook and puts it away and doesn't even get it out and look at it until 2009. And something made him think of it, and he found out that it was binary computer language. He had it taken to someone to have it analyzed. Let's see if I can find it. And here's what it said. Exploration of Humanity, 666, 8100. And it gives coordinates. Continuous for planetary Advan. We don't know what that means. Fourth coordinate, continue out, UQS, CBPR, before, and then it gives a list of coordinates. Eyes of your eyes, origin, and he gives another coordinate. Origin year, 8100. Now, folks, to me, this is a setup. Remember, devils don't tell the truth. They want people to think, and this is what the prevailing theory is that these ETs that landed at Rendlesham Forest they're not from another planet. They're not some weird, wacky-looking, freaky Marvin the Martian aliens. The prevailing theory is that they are us 8,000 years from now, or 6,000 years from now, in the year 8100. That humans from the year 8100 came back in time, planted this planetary warning in the mind of Jim Peniston and left. Now, I don't believe that. I will, however, show you, let's see here. Is this the coordinates? Yeah. Here's one of the coordinates. This is in Belize, and it is a an ancient pyramid site, a place of worship where they worship the gods who descended down from the heavens. Here is another one. This is, I think, the remains of the temple of Apollo or Apollon. Apollyon, the destroyer. This is another one. This is out in the middle of the ocean off the Irish coast. Now, there is a story that goes along with this spot. And it's called by several different names. High Brazil is one. Avalon is another. The Scottish and the British and the Irish all had this story of a fabled mystical island just off of their coast that they called High Brazil, or they called it Avalon. And Avalon is sort of like a place of the afterlife. It is where the good soldiers go. It's where the good kings go. It's where the good noblemen go. They go, they live out a very happy, fruitful life in the afterlife together. It can't be seen by mortal eyes. It's hidden in a fog, which is why nobody's ever seen it. But if you die, you're carried and ferreted over there to live on this beautiful, luxurious island for all of eternity. There was a contemporary Christian rock group that named themselves Avalon, supposedly thinking that Avalon was just another word for heaven. But it's not. It's two different places. Because the idea is that both Avalon and High Brazil are sort of the, High Brazil is sort of the Irish Atlantis. Is that it was sunk during the great deluge, the great flood, and is awaiting a day when it can rise up again and flourish and be a blessing to all the kingdoms of the earth once again. Now, here is John Burroughs. That's not John Burroughs. That's Linda Moulton Howe. John Burroughs, who was at the MUFON meeting, under hypnotic regression, remembers being taken inside the ship. But only under hypnotic regression. The night that they had the sighting, they told him, they said, "Where have you been?" He said, "What are you talking about?" They said, "We've been looking for you for an hour. Where did you go?" And he mentions this, and I'm going to play a portion of his regression. And YouTube, I'm using this under the fair use clause, because I'm offering commentary on it. But listen to, this was taped, I think, in 1988, some 8 years after the event took place.
Light, a weird oval-shaped light. It's hovering. It's strobing.
Flashing back and forth, flashing on and
it's
off.
The white, it's white, but there's lights below it. There's little lights below it. There's the orange lights, there's the red lights. It's like sun. It's like the sun, but it's not shaped like the sun. It's like an oval shaped thing, and it's pulsating. It's pulsating.
How far away is it?
10 feet, maybe 15.
How big is it?
I don't know. It keeps changing.
Changing
its
pulse.
The lights are pulsating. It's hard to judge. It's there now. It's moving back.
Away from you?
It's moving away. It's moving. It's up in the air. It's moving back. It's up through the trees. It's moving back. Now it's in the distance, but it's there. It's down low again. How did it get through the trees? I don't know. Well, we'll follow it. Call him. Tell him. We're going to follow it. We got to follow it. I can't reach him on the radio. The hell with the radio. Put it down. We don't need it. Put it in your pocket. Let's go. We don't care what they say. We've got to find out. Something's there. We've got to find out. Let's go. Spread out more. Okay, let's go. Okay, move. Okay, be careful. I feel weird. I feel tingly. I feel tingly. We all feel tingly. We all got to know. We got to know. Is it a UFO, John? I don't know. What is a UFO? What is it? I don't know. It's not real. We can hear humming now. The ground's shaking. This is weird. Why didn't we bring our guns? Could it be drawn to us? I feel like I'm being pulled. Something's pulling me. Oh, God. Sergeant Patterson, what's going on? I don't know. It's pulling it towards us. Oh, look, it just changed again. It's small. Now it's moving back. Look how fast it moved back. Look, it's a quarter mile back now. Let's start running. We can't let it get away from us. We got to know where it is. Okay, well, it's gone. Okay, security control, return to base. ETA back, I don't know. 30 minutes, hour, unknown. Okay, keeping radio contact. Okay, and we just start walking back. And I'm talking to him. I'm talking. Sergeant Peniston and I and Bananchek, we're walking. Now we're walking back. Okay, what was it? I don't know. John, what do you think it is? I don't know. Do I look scared? You look pale. I don't know what I saw, John. I think it was a UFO. I don't know. I don't want to believe what I saw. He goes, you know, John, it seemed like we were there and all of a sudden we're here. Why couldn't we get radio contact with them? We should have been able to. We were, there was repeater stations, there were towers, but we lost contact with them. I don't know. Well, what are we going to do? I don't know. Let's just see what happens when we get back. So we're walking, and it's cold, and we're walking, and we come across a creek that we don't even remember crossing. Do you remember this, John? No, I don't remember this. Do you remember that, John? No, I don't remember. Well, how did we get there? I don't know. Could we have been moved by it? Could something have picked us off the ground? I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. No, the British police are there. The ship commander's there. The flight chief, the security flight chief's there. Our flight chief's there. There's other law enforcement patrols there. Everybody was concerned. They go. We've lost contact with you for 45 minutes, 50 minutes. We didn't know where you were. We saw the WSA tower saw all kinds of lights in the air. They thought they saw something being beamed up in the air, but they weren't sure. They thought we lost you, John. We thought we lost you guys. Well, what happened? We don't know. So then we meet up with our flight chief and the ship commander and my flight chief. Sergeant Turner goes, John, are you okay? Yeah. We thought we lost you guys. What do you mean? Well, nothing was right, John. We completely lost you. We completely lost contact with you. There were other patrols down at the gate. They said they saw weird happenings. They said they saw something above the tree level. They said they thought they saw something being lifted off the ground. And they said they thought that you were gone. They said that they thought we had lost you. They thought something had taken you. And the stiff commander goes, well, gentlemen, I've got some interesting news for you. We lost radio contact with you, as you know. We thought we lost you. The WSA tower saw some weird things. Heathrow Tower had two unidentified flying objects. They marked it a UFO. They marked it as a UFO. The British base that's 4 miles from here also marked it as a UFO. What I feel you were involved in, gentlemen, was a UFO.
Now, is there any life form in or with that craft?
That was a life form.
So, John,
did you hear what he said? they asked him, were there any life forms associated with the ship? And he said, that was the life form. Now, Ezekiel 1. This Bible is right. When I hear things like this, and then I go back to the scriptures and see there it is, then I know that he can't be lying. And see, he's been one of these guys, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him and didn't get a chance to meet him. I saw him. At the time I saw him, number one, he was up on stage giving his talk. And number two, there was a radio station there, and they were interviewing him in a live interview. And, of course, I didn't want to break into that. But I have been praying for him because, number one, he went through a lot. He was taken up into this ship. His partners, Peniston and the other guy, saw him be dissolved in this light and was taken up. He disappeared. Not too long after this incident, he realizes that he's got something majorly wrong in his back and he's got something wrong with his heart. And one of the things that is bizarre about this whole thing was after he had a magnificent career in the Air Force. But when he tries to make a claim with the Veterans Administration over his back and his heart being damaged related to this event, he finds out that he has no medical records with the VA. None. Which is impossible. Then, by the time this event happened, John Burroughs had already been at the RAF Bentwaters or RAF Woodbridge for about 8 months. He had been stationed there in 1979. But his service record showed that he wasn't transferred there until sometime in 1981. Something isn't right. They made it look like he wasn't there at the time of this event. And after getting several lawyers and fighting the government for years, they finally gave him his disability benefits because he's got a bad heart and a very bad back because of the event that took place. And he's finally got his benefits, and the government admitted that it took place as a result of an encounter with an unidentified flying object. Now, the last thing he said here was, did he encounter any living beings? And he said the ship was a living being. Is that wrong? No. The Bible says that the angels of the chariots of the Lord are 20,000, even thousands of angels. Angels are living creatures. They are living organisms, living entities. They have life in themselves. God has given life to them. They are alive. They speak. They move about. They eat. Yes, they eat. What do they eat? Angels' food. And I'm not making a joke. That's what the Bible says. God fed angels food to the children inhabiting the wilderness for 40 years. whatever it is that manna was, the angels eat on it, and God fed it to the Israelites for 40 years. So they eat, they live. According to Genesis 6, according to, I believe, 1 Corinthians 15, they have seed and they reproduce. So now Ezekiel tells us concerning the four living creatures that he saw, verse 13, as for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, and like the appearance of lamps, it went up and down among the living creatures. That's very, very similar to what all of these men, including Colonel Halt, who came out the next night. I haven't even got to him yet. He came out the next night and had a pocket recorder and was recording the events as they took place. But it looked like lights moving back and forth and up and down around this ship, this conveyance. And that's what the Bible describes in verse 13. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, and like the appearance of lamps, it went up and down and among the living creatures. And the fire was bright, and the fire went forth, and out of the fire went forth lightning. And the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. That is how these things move. Now, as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures and his four faces. So every set of living creatures, you have one, two, three, four on each corner. By each one of them, there is a wheel. And the appearance of it, verse 15, as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like the under the color of a barrel, and they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was, as it were, a wheel in the middle of a wheel. And when they went, they went upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. As for the rings, they were so high that they were dreadful, and their rings were full of eyes round about them four. One of the things that both Colonel Halt, John Burroughs, Jim Penniston said is that the second night that they had encounters with these things, they looked like giant eyes flying in the sky, blinking every now and then. That is exactly what you see in Ezekiel chapter 1 and verse 18. Their rings were full of eyes round about them four. Now, I believe that because these chariots do not exist fully in our three-dimensional world, that it's possible. Some people say that the ship that they saw was hard to describe because it was always changing its appearance. And that was hard for them to comprehend. Well, let me do this. Imagine this piece of paper represents a two-dimensional world that you and I live on, okay? We only have this way and this way. We don't know about this way. We only live in two dimensions, okay? So let's say that a three-dimensional object, like this pen, travels into our two-dimensional existence. And it's traveling through it. Now, the only thing that we're going to see is the part that matches our two-dimensional line of sight. But as the pen travels through our two dimensions, because the pin is three-dimensional and it has a different shape as it moves through there, it's going to change its appearance as it moves through our two-dimensional realm. Like that. So, it says here that the wheels have eyes. Well, what if on the night that they encountered this particular vehicle or whatever it was, this particular living creature, that all they could see of it at that time was one of the eyes? Because there is another video with John Burroughs on it, and he is freaking out. Because he keeps seeing the eye, he keeps saying the eye, it looks like an eye, it's a giant eye. And the first thing that I thought of when I heard that was, what is it that sits on top of the pyramid on the back of the $1 bill? A fourth dimensional, four-sided eye. That's weird. Anyway, let me get back to this. Verse 19, and when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them, and when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the spirit was to go, they went. Thither was their spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. The wheels were alive. So they asked John Burroughs, did you sense the presence of a living creature? And he said, the ship was a living creature. Now, I mentioned another video that he is under hypnotic regression. And I know that we haven't seen all of the tapes. They haven't all been released for whatever reason. And they're, it's his business. He doesn't have to release them if he doesn't want to. But I have picked up from watching the other one that he has seen things that he does not want to remember. He has experienced and lived through things that have so terrified him in his mind that even under hypnosis and being told by the hypnotist that he's not actually there experiencing what he's experiencing, the thought is so overwhelming to him that he can't relay after a certain point what happened to him. In that sense, I feel absolutely horrible for this man. And I love him, and I've prayed for him. Like the guy in Patient 17 documentary done by Jeremy Corbell. He interviews a guy who's got an alien implant under his skin. And the guy says, I consider myself to be a believing, practicing Christian. Corbell says to him, what will this do if it turns out that this is alien material? What will that do to your religion? And he said, I'm not sure. Well, my heart goes out to these people. I'd like to be able to reach them somehow, some way, with the truth of the Word of God, so that they can know exactly what these things are that they encountered. That they're not beneficial, they're not benevolent, they are evil, they're malevolent, and they could have killed him had God allowed them to. They would have done it. Meanwhile, God sent his only begotten son to die on the cross so that this man and others like him who have been attacked, abducted, taken without their permission, so that they could have and live a free life, free from alien intervention, alien contact, alien, what's the word I'm using? I'm thinking of man-stealing, kidnapping, abduction, free from the terror, the extreme horror that people go through who have had contact with these people, who have fierce countenances. My heart's desire that these people get to know about Jesus and become free. So, it's stuff like this that goes on our website, UFOPastor.com. Start sharing that website with people, especially people that you know that have told you that they've had encounters with UFOs or that they have been abducted. Share this with them. If we can save one of them, it'll be worth it. The Lord bless you. I love you. Thank you for your prayers for us. We'll see you tomorrow night for our midweek church service. God bless you. Adios. Think Bible.